This is Jerry Pippin and the UFO Files, and of course we're talking with James Carrion, the 38th Annual International UFO Symposium in Denver is underway, or will be, August 10th through 11th and 12th. And it, of course, is being held the same place you've been having it for a couple of years, right, James?
That's right, at the Denver Tech Center Marriott in Denver, Colorado.
Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you, Jerry.
I really have been impressed in the last couple of years with the MUFON website and the way you steer the reports to the individual directors. I want to compliment you on that.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about this year's symposium. I know you have quite a few interesting people. Including I noticed Stanton Friedman, and he's bringing along a woman who helped him do some Betty Hill stuff.
Right. We have an excellent lineup of speakers this year. Stan Friedman's going to be there. He co-authored a book with Kathleen Martin. Kathleen used to be the director of field investigative training for MUFON. She's also Betty Hill's niece. So she co-wrote this book with Stanton about some more detail on the Betty and Barney Hill case based on her close personal relationship with Betty and some of the things she learned over the years.
You know, talking about some of the MUFON people that are doing exceptional work, Sam Maranto up in Illinois there, your Illinois director, we just did a show with him about the O'Hare sighting. He did a good investigation on that. He'll be there, too.
That's right. Sam's going to give the attendees an update on not only the O'Hare sighting, but also the Tinley Park, Illinois sightings. There's been, over the past few years, there have been a number of triangular UFO sightings over Tinley Park.
And some of the other people we'll cover here as well. If you want to, you can go ahead and do a rundown, or I can ask you questions about them. A lot of very interesting people this year, I think. Of course, you always have interesting people.
Of course, but this is actually going to be a very interesting symposium, primarily because there's some new information that's come out about MJ-12. Brad Sparks co-authored a paper with Barry Greenwood. Brad is going to be doing the presentation. He's going to talk about the early origins of MJ-12, and you know, interestingly enough, the way this information came out was we actually had it in our files all along. We just didn't know about it. You know, MUFON has been collecting not only case information, but official government documents, as well as private research documents throughout the years, and it wasn't until this last year when we went ahead and digitized all of that, those documents under our Pandora project, did we realize that, hey, this is some interesting information we need to get into the hands of some researchers. So we gave it to a group of folks who took it apart and analyzed it, and they came to some interesting conclusions. And I don't want to let the cat out of the bag here until after the symposium, because I promised the both Barry and Brad that it would be an exclusive story for them at the symposium. But it's going to be just some very amazing stuff about MJ-12.
Well, you know, we have a reporter there, Jane Swartley, and she will be reporting back to us on what is unveiled. Now, let's talk a little bit about the symposium itself. You get people from all over the world. Can they go to one session, or do they have to buy a ticket for the whole thing, or how's that work?
We have a number of packages. We have our Blue Book package, which includes all speakers plus the Friday night banquet and the Saturday luncheon. Then we have what's called our Majestic package, which includes all the speakers but no meals. And then if folks can't make all the speakers, or they're only going to be in Denver for a day or so, we have Saturday only speakers and Sunday only speakers, or even single speakers. So if the only thing you can do is come down to the hotel for an hour or two, you can purchase a single speaker ticket and see your favorite speaker talk.
Right, and we have a link to your website on that page with all the information about that hotel.
That's right. They can find all the information at www.mufon.com, M-U-F-O-N.com, and just click on our symposium link, which is right there on the front page.
One of my favorite reporters in the world, George Knapp, is going to be there this year.
Yes, George is going to be our keynote speaker at the banquet, and we're really excited about having George there. I heard George speak at the Crash Retrieval Conference November of last year in Vegas, He's an excellent speaker, and he's just so funny as well. And he had me on the floor just rolling with laughter, you know, based on his history with the UFO subject. And actually, George is going to be doing two things. He's going to be entertaining us during our meal, but also he's going to, you know, get a little serious and talk about his work with the with NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Sciences, on the Bigelow Ranch in Utah. There was a book that came out of that that George co-authored called Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Right, right, and we have an interview of George available on our website about that book and about that whole incident. Is really
it's fascinating.
Yes.
So it's all, you know, all in on what his personal involvement was there.
And so he will be there at the banquet as well as around for a while during the convention.
He will be. I think he's basically staying for the entire conference. So.
Great, great. Another guy you have, I saw in Roswell briefly. He didn't get a chance to interview him. He was in and out of there really fast. John Green.
John is our MC. He's been gracious enough to MC our symposiums over the last 2 to 3 years. But he's also going to be our luncheon speaker, and he'll be talking about his work as a documentary producer, and specifically about UFO hunting. So we're excited to have John back.
You know, you have one thing. I hate to say I don't know much about something, but I don't know much about the Portage, Ohio case. Is that the way you pronounce it, or Portage area?
Yeah, Portage, Ohio. Uh-huh. You know, this is probably one of the most interesting updates we're getting on some old cases. In the Portage, Ohio case, back in the 1960s, there was a series of law enforcement officials who basically chased a UFO for 80-something miles and crossed state lines to chase this object. And when they reported it to Project Blue Book, the Blue Book folks tried to convince them they were chasing the planet Venus. Now, this really upset these law enforcement officials, so what they did is, independently of both Project Blue Book as well as NICAP, they did their own personal investigation.
Now, Michael Nelson's giving the presentation, and he was actually an officer, right?
That's right, and this was years later. He wasn't an officer, obviously, at the time of the sighting, but years later, when he worked in that same office, he came across in the cold case files this investigation that was done by the officials involved, and he, you know, this is something we're just about to throw out, but he grabbed onto it and did some research, some very good research on it, including some new physical evidence research that I think will show that these folks weren't chasing the planet Venus; they were chasing a real object.
And that happened, I believe, in 1966, the original incident, and. It's amazing how many things have been covered up over the years or glossed over, as in many cases, just like you said, the information was there all the time, but people don't find it.
Right, exactly. And it could be hidden away in somebody's personal files. You know, there are a lot of UFO researchers out there. A lot of them have some really good information that they sort of hold on to. And unfortunately, when they pass, their survivors, their family members will, you know, not know what to do with it and end up throwing it out in the trash or selling it at a flea market. You know, this is invaluable research. MUFON has a project undergoing right now to try to get those folks to donate or at least leave it to MUFON in their will so that we can preserve it.
You know, you talked about the MJ-12 things you're going to be doing. I noticed you have one of my favorite guys as well, Ryan Wood, fellow Coloradan, who's going to be doing a workshop, I take it.
Yep, he's actually going to be doing a workshop on MJ-12, talking about document authentication, the process that his research group goes through to authenticate alleged MJ-12-related documents. So it's going to be a sort of a hands-on, interactive, up-close and personal type of workshop. I think the folks who are attending that are going to get a lot out of it.
And who's this fellow you're going to be talking? He's going to be talking about the Maelstrom Air Force Base case, Salas, Robert Salas?
Right, Robert Salas. He was actually at Maelstrom when those UFO flyovers occurred. Just to remind your viewers, this is the case where a UFO was sighted over the base, but also allegedly disabled or turned off the launch system for some of the nuclear weapons.
Now, when we talk about all of these things MUFON has covered over the years, it seems to me that you really got your training and all of this stuff put together thanks to your expertise, frankly, with the internet and its abilities. It seems to me MUFON's really making some progress. How do you feel about it?
Oh, absolutely. We really want to be the cutting edge and premier UFO investigative and research organization out there. We're using training to maximize the use of the internet for that. So, for example, when somebody from the public wants to report a UFO, they can go directly to our website, fill out a very comprehensive form that gathers all the details. That automatically gets routed to the state director, who then assigns it to a local field investigator for follow-up. So we're really trying to not only gather the data, but also follow up and try to explain what it is. There's a good amount of stuff that's cited out there that has prosaic explanation, but until somebody does their homework, you can't really rule it out as unknown. So we're really trying to do our best.
How about you, James, as international director? You've been busy the last year, I'm sure, since the last time we talked. Anything that you'd like to bring out?
Oh, sure. Let's see. I think actually I spoke with you right after the symposium.
Yes.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, and it was fortunate because I had the time to do it. You know, if I didn't officially take over the international director role until November, right before that is when that Kinross case. Yes, you remember the Kinross?
Yes.
I was able to personally investigate that.
Well, tell our audience a little bit about what you discovered.
Sure. Well, most folks are familiar with the claims by this alleged company called the Great Lakes Dive Company, who said that they found in Lake Superior not only the F-89 that crashed in 1983, but also the object it was chasing, which was allegedly a UFO. They produced these sonar pictures and they put them on an internet website. Now, this traveled like wildfire around the internet. Everybody was very excited about this because they thought, oh, finally, there's some physical evidence that we can, you know, we just put some divers in the water, we can go and retrieve this UFO. Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times in ufology, folks get really excited and they forget to do the basics, which is do your homework and try to substantiate the claims first. So I started an investigation using all of MUFON's resources to first look into the whether or not this was who these folks were that were making these claims. We could not tie them into any real company, even though they claim they have been in business for a number of years. Nobody in the diving community or the salvage community knew who they were. So they were making all these claims with absolutely no background, no real background. And when they were confronted with this by MUFON and by myself, I think they eventually got scared off and they eventually took their website down.
So basically, it was all about nothing.
Absolutely. It's another one of those strange cases where you wonder, you know, what is motivating these people to make these claims? You know, there's always the money motive that comes to mind. You know, somebody wants to sell a video of this alleged UFO or make a documentary on it. But then there's also this other aspect of it, which is, you know, how much of this is disinformation? You know, where there's the powers that are out there that are covering this up. Want to send ufologists down the wrong rabbit hole and spin their wheels investigating bogus claims to keep them away from the real material.
And do you have a feeling about how much disinformation is out there on purpose? It seems to me that a lot of people are sent on wild goose chases and many people are conned into reporting things that they believe are true, and then they have to admit, well, maybe they're not. And so you may be right, that may be disinformation. In other words, what I'm asking you, James, is you think there's a real organized disinformation campaign on UFOs?
You know, my personal belief, yes. And, you know, a lot of folks don't want to believe it. They tend to explain it as conspiracy theory, but I don't think it's conspiracy theory. I think it just makes a lot of sense. I mean, here, for example, if we just take from a prosaic explanation point of view, we have our government, for example, that experiments on very exotic aircraft in a number of places around the United States. And, you know, they would like nothing more than somebody who sees this exotic new aircraft to explain it away as a UFO, because that keeps them from having to explain to the public what they're spending the dollars on and what they're experimenting on. So I think there's a vested interest on the part of our government, at least, to keep the UFO subject alive because they use it as cover for their own secret projects.
Yeah, you made a point there, James, and, you know, this goes back in history for quite a ways. I just came back from Roswell. 60 years ago, they were still using this disinformation on that, you know, the Hawk David affidavit, the public information officer. He evidently, shortly before his death, a couple, 3 years, said that the general said, pay attention to the crash site, and what, and meanwhile, there was another crash site where there was a lot of evidence. So, I mean, you know, if things like that happen, and I know from a personal standpoint, investigating things as an investigative reporter, a lot of times they use misdirection to get you going on something that has a little truth or maybe is important, but not the real story. You know what I mean? They have that down to a science.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, if you think about the time frame for Roswell, this is 1947, right after the end of the war, they had become experts in misinformation and disinformation just for the war effort. So they had huge resources where if they wanted to cover something like that up, they very well could, and they could do a good job at it.
Now, do you make of, you know, some of the media these days? It appears that they are reporting some of these UFO stories with a straight face, or am I being too optimistic?
Well, I think it's hit and miss. I really think it depends on the comfort level of the reporter. Those folks who have taken the time to educate themselves, or at least be educated, will normally report it with a straight face. It's typically those reporters that are just handed the story that, you know, based on their level of uncomfortableness, will just make a side remark or dismiss it outright. So I really think, it's our job as, you know, as, for example, investigative organizations to educate, you know, the media about how serious the subject is in a non-alarming manner.
When we talk about MUFON and your role, what can we expect in the next year? More of the same, or you got any new projects or something you want to bring out?
We have so many things going on. It's really hard to keep up with the changes that are being made. One of the big things MUFON is doing is we're not only streamlining our investigative organization, but we're also, for example, rewriting our investigator manual. We're making our investigator manual to be more of a forensic nature. In other words, this is an A to Z handbook for investigating UFOs and for documenting the evidence, making sure you preserve the evidence, chain of custody. So some of the common things that folks, you know, they're interested in, they're used to seeing on shows like CSI or some of these other scientific detective, shows that are on TV. We want to take a more forensic approach to how we collect this data. So that's a big change to our investigative arm. The other big thing we're doing is we're finally getting underway some research projects. We've gathered all this data throughout the years. What is that data telling us? And that's where we take a closer look. And that's going to be a two-pronged approach. One is to get the information out to other non-MUFON investigators, like we did with this MJ-12 information, so they can get their hands on it and analyze it and pick it apart. But we also have our own internal research teams. We have two teams that are starting now that we're forming. One is our history team. One is our abduction team. So with our history team, we want to take a look at history of the subject, go back to the very beginning, and try to analyze all this information we have from official government documents to, you know, reports from witnesses and so on, to take a very, you know, from go to back to the very beginning and try to establish some starting point there. The abduction team is taking a look at the abduction phenomena and trying to draw some conclusions. One of the things I found when I took over the organization is we have an incredible amount of information on abductions. MUFON actually had a project called the Abduction Transcription Project, where we recruited all of these therapists, the therapists who were, you know, going out there and they were conducting a regression with abductees. We got them to send us their recorded transcripts, and then we transcribed them, omitting witness information. So, and we have just, you know, drawers and drawers full of this information that really needs to be taken a closer look at.
That will be interesting to watch that unfold. Once again, let's talk about your symposium coming up here. It's 10th to 12th, and I think I've covered everybody. I think I left out Dr. Shield or Shide. Yeah. He's going to be talking about, I guess, response to UFO research, period, on Sunday or something like that. And you have some other people. I think I've pretty well mentioned everyone.
Forgot Timothy Good.
Yeah, haven't mentioned Timothy. That's right. And he comes all the way from England. And he's speaking in the evening on Saturday night?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Timothy's going to be doing a great talk based on his new book, UFOs and Military Intelligence. Again, going back to what we just talked about, there is a tremendous amount of interest on the part of our military in the UFO subject, even though they won't admit to as much, but we see it based on government documentation, based on informal contacts and so on. He's going to talk about some of the recent information he's uncovered.
And one of the great things about going to something like the MUFON symposium is the camaraderie of everybody, networking and talking to each other and speaking with each other. So if you're even slightly interested in this subject, the ambiance is wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention here was this is for the first time ever, MUFON is going to be putting on public display copies of the McMinnville, Oregon negatives. These were the photos taken by the Trent family in 1950, analyzed by the Condon Committee in 1968, and declared to be authentic UFO photos. So scientifically scrutinized and still out there, it has not been disproven a hoax. And we're going to be have a nice public information display. Anybody from the public can walk into the hotel and look at that. There's no cost for that.
Fantastic. We urge people to go by. The hotel, again, is the Marriott.
The Denver Tech Center Marriott is off of Bellevue Avenue in Denver.
Thank you very much, James. I've enjoyed it, and we urge everyone to attend the symposium. And we'll be talking to Jane about what happened later on.
Okay, thanks so much, Jerry, for having me on.
Very much. That was James Carrion. I'm Jerry Pippin, and this is something you need to go to. UFO Symposium, MUFON Symposium, 38th Annual. Can you believe that? Until next time, cheers. The 60th Anniversary Roswell Jerry Pippin Show T-shirt is now on sale. A limited amount of sizes, medium, large, and extra large, are still available. But they are going fast. This T-shirt is made of fine fabric, 100% ultra cotton. And the design of the alien skull will astound you and others around you when you wear this T-shirt for casual wear. Hurry, supply is limited. $15 plus shipping at ShopJerryPippin.com.